Hi, this is Dr. Zion Hyndman, publisher of Natural Nutmeg Magazine and the soon-to-be-released book, Essential Remedies for Women's Health. And I have on our call today one of the authors. Her name is Vicki Kolbener. She is a registered dietitian and owner of Whole Care Nutrition in Wilton. Her practice employs a functional nutrition approach using real food and natural agents to help the body heal itself. Vicki works with infants to adults with chronic illnesses, digestive disorders, food allergies, ADHD, and autism, and provides fertility and prenatal nutrition counseling. She is a contributing author to A Compromised Generation, The Epidemic of Chronic Illness in America's Children, advisory board member and monthly contributor to Natural Nutmeg Magazine. She's a member of the nutrition faculty of the Autism Research Institute, and she's also on the executive board member of Epidemic Answers and sits on the CP Canvas and CANS Advisory Council. So, Vicki, welcome to the call today. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Diane.
Great. So, you are one of the authors in one of our for one of our chapters for the new book that's going to be released. We're looking at hopefully mid-April right now, and you have a great chapter on everything that a woman should do and be aware of before trying to get pregnant. Actually,
exactly.
Yeah. And you've got a lot of experience in that area, and we're going to cover everything from, diet and environmental toxins and supplements and things like that. But one thing I just happened to think of while I was sort of introducing that is I wanted you to talk to me a little bit about how far before a woman, is trying to get pregnant, should she start thinking about doing some of these things that we're going to get into? Like, can you give us a time frame, maybe?
Sure, that's a great question. And, one of the things I'm always very careful with when I'm talking about pregnancy, conception, fertility, is that sometimes women put a lot of pressure on themselves, and they think that they have to be on a certain timeline, or if they've done something, in quotation marks, wrong, that it's going to be a problem. And I like to really, really underscore for everybody that the body has a really, really fantastic ability to heal itself if we treat it properly. And that throughout the ages, we've all been able to overcome all kinds of different problems and challenges and we've survived as a culture. So I don't like parents to get too nervous if they think that they've done something that wasn't quite right. But ideally, I always recommend that people start thinking about conception and cleaning up their bodies 6 months before they're actually ready to conceive. A year is even better, but for many people, kind of the cutoff is about 6 months, is when you really want to start thinking about how to clean up that body and get yourself ready and prepared for conception.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I like how you said that, we need to eliminate some of the stress, because I think stress is a huge factor in infertility, for one.
It is.
We all did things in our 20s that probably wouldn't be great for, preparing to have a baby, but,
of course,
6 months,
my mother smoked. My mother smoked and drank alcohol.
So did mine.
Pregnant.
Many so
of
did
our
mine.
Mothers did, and we were able to...
We turned out okay.
We turned out okay. So I just always want my clients and anybody who listens to me to know that, we need to take everything with a grain of salt and really do the best that we can with the knowledge that we have,
mm-hmm.
and obviously make healthy choices, but that we should not overstress ourselves if we've made a so-called mistake.
Right, exactly. So let's talk about some of the things that women should start doing in this 6 months to, year best-case scenario. I love how you organized your chapter where you start off by saying house cleaning, throwing out the trash.
Right.
And, yeah, you get into a lot of information about, nutrition to environmental toxins and things like that. So, you can really start anywhere. It's a lot of information. I mean, obviously, we're encouraging people to buy the book. There's no way we can cover everything in, the next 45 minutes that we have or so. But just highlight the most important things that you think
are
good for people to know.
Absolutely. And one of the things I also wanted to point out is that this book, that the chapter is about conception and prenatal care, but one of the things that is really also part and parcel of that is fertility challenges, and you mentioned that a few minutes ago. And women don't know until they're starting to, you know, trying to become pregnant if they're going to have fertility challenges. So we are seeing an increase in that. And I think many of the things that are so important for having a healthy baby are also really important for normal and, you know, simple, easy conception. So the fertility piece and the healthy pregnancy piece are go hand in hand, and I don't often distinguish between the two because many of the same things matter. So as I'm talking, you may hear me talking about fertility or about conception, and both of them really are based on the same principles. Mm-hmm. So one of the first things, and I know I talk about this in the book a little bit, someone I knew, and I stole this from her, and I freely admit it, she has talked about how the womb is really the primary place, the first place the baby lives, and that we spend so much time worrying about the nursery. What color is it going to be? What paint? Pick the right fabric, get the right furniture. And we spend less time thinking about the baby's first home, which is really our womb. And that that should really be the place that we are thinking of first. And that it should be as clean as possible, as healthy as possible, and as nurturing as possible. And the things that make it nurturing are healthy foods and a lack of toxins. So there's certain things we want to include and add, and there are other things that we want to take away. And when I say healthy foods, there's lots of misinformation out there and lots of confusion as to what healthy foods are. And some of the things I say may actually be surprising to some people. But the first thing I tell people is if we have to do this on a continuum, the biggest priority is to get rid of artificial things. Artificial sweeteners, artificial colorings, artificial flavors, pesticides, hormones, antibiotics, all the things that we add to food that we don't naturally find in them, all the chemicals and the environmental toxins that we do take up in ourselves and do affect us biochemically that we don't really think about when we're eating. And there's a lot of evidence that environmental toxins, whether they be things like pesticides or whether they be things like bisphenol A, BPA, which we find in plastic water bottles and even in cash register machines, can impact our fertility. So it's very important that if we want to get pregnant, we don't have too much of that in our bodies or we limit our exposure. But in addition to which, we're finding children are being born with those things in their bodies. And one of the things that I always mention is a study that was done by the Environmental Working Group. It was in 2005, and it was a very small study, but it was one that had a profound impact on many people who are in the healthcare industry who care about integrative health. And basically what they did is they took 10 children who were born of healthy, essentially healthy mothers. There was no prediction or no expectation that these children would be ill. And what they did is they assessed their cord blood to see how many different chemicals they could find. And they were able to identify in this study 287 different chemicals in the cord blood of newborn infants. Obviously, what this means is that those chemicals are crossing the placenta and they are entering the baby's, the fetus's body and the baby's body, and the children are being born with a chemical load. And that's something that we know is not particularly healthy for them.
Yeah, that's crazy. That,
right,
that number, I think I remember reading that from your chapter or maybe some of your other articles, but that's just unbelievable. And by the way, I just want to say, the things that you're recommending, I mean, granted, we are talking specifically about women that are trying to conceive, but really, this is something that that all of us should be following, you know, these recommendations that you're making, for sure.
Well, absolutely. And the other thing that's so important, and a big piece of it, is that we're talking about women who want to get pregnant. The reason women want to get pregnant is because they want to have children. They want their children to be healthy, and they want to do the best they can for their children. Well, children are actually at the greatest risk from exposure to many of these things because their bodies are smaller. So, for example, if you or I eat a piece of fruit that's covered in pesticides, as a percentage or the amount of it as a percentage of our body mass is different than a child who eats the same piece of fruit, and yet they weigh a quarter of the amount that we do. The impact is actually greater on them. So we want to make sure that our children are clean. And making sure that our diets are clean and our bodies are clean is the best way to do that. And in addition to things like the artificial ingredients and the chemicals, the other thing that it's important to limit is sugar and excess fat and undesirable fats. Healthy fats like essential fatty acids are actually very important and something we should be eating. But processed fats, things like margarine, we don't really want to be eating much of that. And sugar is a big key problem in terms of what we want to get rid of. I think a lot of people also don't realize that sugar and estrogen are actually linked and that estrogen, normal estrogen balance, is important for being able to conceive and also for having a healthy pregnancy. And estrogen can be excessively increased by a lot of things. One of them is too much fat cells. So if a woman is overweight, she does want to try to lose weight. Now, again, you can become pregnant when you're overweight, but if you're having trouble getting pregnant, you might want to lose some weight if you're overweight. Inflammation actually also causes an increase in estrogen, which can work against getting pregnant and does work against having a healthy pregnancy. And sugar causes lots of inflammation. So we know that a high sugar diet will increase inflammation and increase estrogen. We also know that if someone has the liver processes estrogen and helps us get rid of it the way we're supposed to. We produce it, and then we're supposed to break it down and get rid of it. It's a continuous cycle. So when the liver is overcome trying to deal with other toxins, it has trouble processing the estrogen, and we may also have too much of that. Another thing that I'm going to talk about a little later is folic acid, because folic acid is incredibly important for a healthy pregnancy, and we know that women are recommended to take folic acid when, you know, in their prenatal vitamins and when they become pregnant, because it's so important for avoiding things like spina bifida and other neuroskeletal defects. But the right type of folic acid is important, because folic acid is also really important for breaking down that estrogen so you can become pregnant. And the other thing that's really important is lots of fiber. And most of us do not get enough fiber in our diet. So eating a diet that's adequate in fiber, which mostly comes from fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, beans, those kind of foods have fiber. They really help us process our estrogen appropriately. So what I always tell people is, if it came from the earth and it was clean, it's probably a pretty good food for you. And if it came from a factory, you want to think twice about it.
Right. And if you're in the grocery store, just shop the perimeter.
Shop the perimeter. Exactly. And you know what? I do find, you know, I do try to be very realistic about what women can do. We have very busy lives. Many of us are working, as you and I are. You know, we are stressed in many ways. And so you're saying, well, reduce the stress, but only eat healthy. And that can cause stress in and of itself. So organic markets have tons of good resources for healthy food. And that has less processing, that is using more natural ingredients, that doesn't allow pesticides or toxins into the food. So I'm a huge proponent of organic food. I think it is one of the most important things you can do for yourself and for your children. And I know that many people will also say, look, I can't afford all organic food. It's so expensive. And there's two things I usually respond to that, one of which is, because of the increased interest in organic foods, I'm finding that the cost in a lot of grocery stores is actually going down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that much more expensive than as much as it used to be. There's not that big a disparity between conventional and organic food. The other thing is, you have to bear in mind the healthcare cost of eating those pesticide-laden foods. And that's a cost that you may have to pay later, but you will ultimately pay it. And thirdly, I'm going to mention the Environmental Working Group again, because I love that organization. I think they do wonders and, you know, for us, and try to take care of us very well. But the Environmental Working Group has a list that's easily accessible on their website called the Dirty Dozen. And that's a list of the 12 most toxic. Every year they reevaluate it and come out with a new list. And much of the fruits and vegetables remain the same, but it's a list of the 12 most toxic fruits and vegetables that are most pesticide-laden, most toxic. They also come out with something they call the Clean 15, which are the healthiest and the ones that are the safest to eat if they're not organic. So for somebody trying to choose what they're going to eat organic and what not, they can use that as a good reference guide. And strawberries,
right,
by the way, are one of the worst.
I was going to say also, any kind of fruit, typically any kind of fruit where you eat the skin, I think is where you have to worry about pesticides.
Correct.
That may not be across the board, but, you know, things like avocados or banana where you're peeling that skin off. I mean, I know some things can actually transfer from the skin to the fruit, but I think it's more rare. So
correct.
That's a good,
it's better. Anything that you can peel, a melon, a banana, et cetera, anything that's going to be peeled, you're going to have less exposure to the pesticide. But to be totally honest, you know, and to really look at the pieces, the pesticide is sprayed not only on the plant, but it gets into the ground. So they do actually absorb it as well. It's not just external. So the more you can do organic, the better. But if you have to make a choice, using that Environmental Working Group, Clean 15 and Dirty Dozen, is a great way to make those choices.
Mm-hmm. So while we're on the subject of environmental toxins, let's talk a little bit about how that can affect fertility.
Many, many different ways. And the thing about environmental toxins is there's so many of them, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that shocked me is that only 5% of the chemicals that we use have actually been tested. So when somebody might say, well, that thing, that you know, compound has not been proven to be dangerous, the truth is it often has not been proven to be not dangerous either. We're assuming that a lack of evidence means that there's no problem, and that's not always the case. And there's many different things that go into our food and into our environment that can affect fertility and also affect our children. There's a correlation between high pesticide use and ADHD in kids. There's also a correlation between pesticides and endocrine disruption, which can impair fertility and impair conception. So things like pesticides are something that you really want to stay away from when you're trying to get pregnant and to have a healthy child. Hormone imbalances are also really problematic, and hormone imbalances can come from any kind of chemical that's called an endocrine disruptor, because our endocrine system is what manages our hormones. So something I mentioned, bisphenol A, which comes from plastic water bottles and also comes from other types of plastic, but we also see it on cash register receipts, and every time we touch one, we actually absorb some of it. Bisphenol A has been proven to be an endocrine disruptor. So not only can it impair fertility, but we've also seen changes, mostly in animal models. They haven't done as much research in people because it's hard to do, obviously. But in animal models, we've seen the reproductive organs of animals changing when they're exposed to too much BPA. So we know that BPA is something that we want to stay away from. There's another thing in soft plastic called phthalates, and that also can be problematic. But even things, we don't think of these as environmental toxins, but they are. Non-organic rice has been shown to contain a lot of arsenic. We also know that certain processed honeys contain mercury. Arsenic and mercury are both toxins. So I tend to use raw honey or local honey as opposed to the stuff that you get in the little teddy bear jar that's really processed. I always use organic rice because, it is important to avoid arsenic. But we have lead, you know, is found in ceramic dishes and other types of things that we find around the house. So clearing for lead, mercury, and other heavy metals, making sure we have no pesticides in our body, trying to avoid some of those chemicals is really important. And when it comes to the plastics, the other thing that's real important is that for anyone who uses the microwave, when you heat that plastic, some of those chemicals will leach into the food if the plastic is touching the food. So I generally recommend that people do not use plastic whenever they're heating something. They either use foil or they use a paper towel or something like that if they're putting something in a microwave. I tend to not use a microwave very often, but when I do, I always make sure that it's not touching plastic, and I don't heat plastic. So glass dishes, glass containers are the things that I use in my home to make sure that we're not being exposed to plastic.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a big thing. A lot of people probably use plastic, and they just don't think about it. The other thing is, like, water bottles. You know, if you use, drink a lot of water out of plastic water bottles, if you leave them in your car in July.
Absolutely. And they get hot, and then all of that stuff leaches into the water. Absolutely.
Right.
And the other thing that people don't always think about, and I don't want to scare anybody again, this is just, you know, informational, making you more aware, lawn care. There are organic lawn care companies and there are non-organic lawn care companies. But if you have kids playing on your lawn and you're having, planning to have children playing on your lawn, you want to make sure you're using clean lawn care. Household cleaners can often be very toxic. And the thing that's amazing to me is that you can buy organic cleaners if you want to, and it's really easy, and they are better, you know, in many ways, from a health perspective, obviously. But if you can't afford them because they're so expensive, vinegar, lemon, and water,
mm-hmm.
and baking soda are four of the most amazing cleaning ingredients that you can have. And you can go online, you can look a million different places and find recipes for natural cleaning products that are effective and don't cause any kind of harmful impact. So
well, that's what our grandmothers used.
That's what our grandmothers used, right, absolutely. And even making sure your water is clean is also important. I usually tell people, especially if they're having trouble with conception. If they're having trouble with fertility, I often tell them to test their water just to make sure there's nothing in there. And then even things like supplements. Supplements are not regulated in this country. And so you can have a supplement that's wonderful and clean and hypoallergenic and high, high quality, and it can really do your body a service. Or you can have a supplement that's contaminated with mercury, lead, and contains nothing that it says on the label. And so knowing where to get your supplements and who to buy them from and which brands are reputable is a really important piece, because supplements can actually be toxic.
Yep.
And dry cleaning is one last thing. Dry cleaning is another one that I tell people. Organic dry cleaning is very important.
Right, and I'm actually starting to see more and more of those popping up, too. People that are
everywhere.
Businesses that are doing, converting their dry cleaning process into organic or toxic-free.
And the interesting thing about that is that I use organic dry cleaners, obviously, and a few of them that I asked why they switched to organic dry cleaning, what interested me was that most of them, I've talked to three different dry cleaners locally who said part of it was a business decision, but more than the business decision, they became concerned for their own health and their children's health, and they decided they didn't want to be working in that environment anymore. So if the person who owns the business doesn't want to be in that environment, I don't want to bring that stuff into my home either.
Right. Yeah. Exactly, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's a lot of toxins out there, but it's really easy and not always expensive to get rid of them.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think, just like we were saying before, you know, whether it's grocery shopping for organic items or using more toxic-free things in your home, I think the initial response is everybody thinks it's more expensive, but there really are a lot of ways that actually I think are cheaper than going out and buying a bottle of Fantastic or
absolutely
Formula 409 or whatever is out there now.
Yep, absolutely. I have bottles in my house, spray bottles of vinegar, lemon. I put essential oils in there, tea tree, vanilla, whatever it may be. Tea tree is a great antiseptic, by the way. And spray those around the house, and everything is clean.
Yeah, it's very simple and very easy and very inexpensive for sure.
Absolutely.
So we've talked about throwing out the trash, so let's talk now about what women can do to redecorate, transform their space, and we're going to talk, about nutrition and diet as well as the home. We've covered a few of these things already, but there's probably some other things that you want to touch on with having women get on more of a healthier diet.
Absolutely. And one thing I did want to mention, we were talking about things to eliminate from the diet that I didn't mention, was there are many people who have food sensitivities. So not every woman necessarily needs to eliminate all of these foods, but if a person has a food sensitivity, it is important to eliminate that. And the two that are the most common that I see are gluten and dairy. And I have seen women, especially when it comes to fertility, who were challenged getting pregnant. And when they stopped eating gluten, they became pregnant much more rapidly. So, and I see the same with dairy. And those are the two that are the most common. It doesn't work for everybody, and it's not a perfect solution. But for people who are inflamed by gluten or dairy or other food sensitivities, that's something that they want to be careful of. But it's not something that I rule out of every woman's diet. And interestingly, again, speaking a little bit about fertility and enhancing your ability to conceive, there's a very large study that was done, which I thought was fascinating. I'm a big fan of natural fat. And I am not as scared of fat as many conventional practitioners. The evidence about the dangers of fat, I think, has been grossly overstated, as long as you're using natural types of fat. And one of the things that we found, that they found in this study, was that for women who were having fertility challenges, whole milk actually enhances fertility more than skim milk. Because the fat actually carries certain vitamins and nutrients that are important for fertility, and also just for healthy mind and healthy brain. So it's important for the baby, and it's important for the mom. And so if you're going to, if somebody's using dairy products, I always recommend that they consume whole milk as opposed to skim milk or low-fat milk. Low-fat milk is not as beneficial as people think, and it can actually be inflammatory. So I'm a big fan of sticking with the basics. And so, in talking about what's a healthy food for a woman's diet, I think, I'm sure you've heard of Michael Pollan, and I think he summed it up best, and this is, as you said, not just about women wanting to become pregnant, but about anybody. He said, in one of his books he wrote, eat food, mostly plants, not too much. And when he meant food, he meant something that didn't come from a factory. And that really sums up everything we're going to talk about and every health concern, you know, that we're worried about. Whole foods, less processed, primarily plants. So looking at fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, beans. And I also look at whole grains, oatmeal, quinoa, amaranth, wild rice, brown rice, things like that are great. Processed wheat, if someone's not gluten sensitive, can also is still not particularly nutritious. So I tend to limit wheat, but if somebody doesn't have a problem with wheat, generally whole wheat is better than white. But we want to look for high fiber grains, and we don't want a diet that's too high in starches. And I differentiate between starches and carbohydrates. People always say carbs, but then they worry about fruits and vegetables as well. And fruits and vegetables are incredibly healthy. And they come wrapped in a package that's rich in antioxidants and flavonoids and all these other compounds that we don't even, haven't even discovered yet, but our bodies need. You know, the only things they can put in a vitamin are the things we've discovered in the lab. But there's a million other, maybe even a billion other compounds in foods that we've yet to discover. So I think supplements can be a nice adjunct, but I don't think they're a replacement for good quality food. So lots of vegetables, lots of fruit, legumes, beans, nuts, seeds are a great basis. And then I have no problem with animal protein if somebody is interested in eating it. One thing we do know, by the way, is that fat cells absorb toxins. That's the part of us that absorbs the toxins that we consume, and the same is true for animals. So it's another reason to be careful. When you eat an animal that's been conventionally raised, it's going to have a lot of toxins in its fat. When you eat an animal that was pasture-fed, grass-fed, organic, it's going to have less toxins in its fat. So it's a healthier fat for us to consume. And I have no problem with eating animal protein as long as it is from a clean source. So eggs, beef, chicken, turkey, fish, all of those are great. Fish, of course, is a concern in terms of mercury because there is so much mercury in the fish nowadays. So what I generally recommend is the National Research Defense Council has a great list, and you can also Google this pretty easily. There's a great list of healthy fish and the fish that is the most toxic. One of the most toxic is swordfish, so I recommend nobody eats that at all. But salmon, for example, especially wild-caught salmon, is relatively low mercury, full of omega-3 fatty acids, which is important for baby's brain and for our own health, and a very nice fish to eat. So wild-caught fish, clean fish, is a good part of the diet. But what we want is lots of fiber, lots of plants, a moderate amount of starches, and a moderate amount of animal protein. Does that make sense?
Yeah, great recommendations, I think. And I think it is important to you know, touch on what you did as far as the fish, too, because I think there's a lot of confusion over, you know, well, what kind of fish to save and the difference between wild and farm-raised.
Right. And the thing about anything, whether it's wild fish or farm or pasture-fed animals, the same concept kind of holds true, which is, yeah, and I always say this, if, you know, when I used to drive, you know, up to Vermont on vacation, and we would drive past the farms with the cows, and I would look at the cows, and I would see the cows eating grass, because that's what cows are supposed to eat, and fish are supposed to eat the algae and the other fish in the sea. Yet, even organic animals are often fed organic corn and organic soy, and even farm-raised fish are fed organic corn and organic soy. So, if the fish or the cow or the chicken is not fed the food that is really native to its diet, its body isn't going to be as healthy as it should be. And we're not going to be able to get the nutrients from it that we want. And if the animal is eating its native diet, it is then healthier for us. And we know there's some studies that show that pasture-fed animals are more nutritious. They have higher levels of omega-3s. They have higher levels of vitamin D. They have higher levels of something called CLA, which helps with weight management. So there's lots of reasons why those animals, not only do they not have the pesticides and toxins and antibiotics and hormones that we're worried about, but they also have higher levels of certain nutrients that we need. And again, those things can be more expensive, but I'm seeing the prices on them come down as well. And very often, farmers markets, there will be local farms that will come to a farmers market that will sell grass-fed animals for a really reasonable price.
Right, yeah. Farmers markets are great, or your local farm for sure, and their prices are generally lower than what you're going to find in the supermarket for sure.
Exactly, exactly.
And, you know, you still have, I mean, I would still ask to see if they are using any kind of pesticides, but generally, it's, you know, they're much safer, I think.
You're right. And they will tell you if they're pasture-fed animals or not. The other thing
right.
is, you know, when it comes to farmers markets, one of the things I find is that I will, of course, ask them if the farmers, you know, at the stand has organic produce or not. And sometimes they'll tell me that they're not certified organic, but they follow organic principles. And to me, again, organic, the paperwork to become certified as an organic farm is, there's a lot of it. And it can be onerous to small farmers. So if I know my local farmers or my local farm stand people, and they tell me that they're following organic practices, and I discuss it with them, and I feel comfortable that they are, I don't worry as much, actually, if they are certified organic as if they follow those principles, because sometimes it's just the cost of the paperwork that limits them.
I was just going to say that, yeah. Sometimes it's just the expense, and we all know that local farmers are struggling, so.
Exactly.
And even more, even better reason for us to be shopping there, but yeah, sometimes it's just that they can't, you know, they just don't have funding to do that, so.
Right, right. And I've had people at farmers markets say to me, no, we use pesticides, and they're very honest, and that's great for them, but, you know, that's not someplace, that's not one of the stands I'm going to shop at. But if somebody tells me, yes, we follow organic practices, I'm much more comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you wanted to mention relating to diet? There was a question I wanted to ask you about folate, so I'm not sure if you're going to get into that or...
Yeah. The thing about folate, I was going to talk about a little bit more later, but folate is very interesting because food-based folic acid is folate. And this can be a little bit confusing, but the folate that we get from food is called folate. The folate that we get in a supplement is called folic acid. And folic acid is actually, we're finding more and more information that folic acid may not be very well utilized by the body. So the supplemental form, the natural form of folate is very good, very healthy, and very supportive of detoxification and good brain function and good immune function and DNA replication, like all the things we need to make healthy babies. But folic acid itself, actually there's some concern and some emerging evidence that it may actually be cancer proliferative. So I have a concern about that. The other piece of it is that there are many, many people who have a normal, what they call a, sounds like a big word, it's called polymorphism. It's a genetic polymorphism. Basically all that means is you have a gene that makes an enzyme work a certain way, and sometimes some people have an enzyme that's more efficient and some have an enzyme that's less efficient. And that's the only piece that we really need to remember is some of us have more efficient, some of us have less, depending on our genes. And the folate processing enzyme can be very inefficient in a high number of people in this country. It's called MTHFR, and you don't need to remember that, but MTHFR can be, there's a number of different changes in it that can make it less efficient. And when that's the case, there are different forms of folate that are actually better. And those are the ones that if I have a woman who I'm going to recommend a prenatal vitamin, I want to make sure she's taking the right form of folate. And I don't generally like to use folic acid. I generally like to use something called 5-MTHF, which is a more broken down, more usable form that seems to be less problematic. And especially if this is a person who's having any trouble with fertility, you can actually get a genetic test. You can have your MTHF tested to see if you have the fully functioning type of enzyme or you have the less efficient type of enzyme. And if you have the less efficient form, it's that much more important to make sure you get the right form of folate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's just confusion around, you know, what that means and why, you know, for certain people who don't process it well, they might need help via supplementation.
Right. And for both people who don't process it well, food folate is still great, and they should be looking for food folate. And that comes from lots of things like leafy greens. You can even get some from orange juice. And beans have folate. Lots of different foods have folate. And food folate is great. I don't tend to push the folic acid form of the supplement with those people. I will generally recommend a different form for them. But food folate is always desirable.
Okay, that's good. So let's talk about other supplements that you recommend. I mean, obviously, you know, it's we're saying that food is definitely the best source.
Of course.
And that's what you want to be focusing on for sure. But in the event that, I don't know, people need a little extra, you have some certain types of supplements that you recommend.
Yes, and I do think that any woman, it's hard to eat healthy, and we all have challenges. So I think a good prenatal vitamin is always great insurance. It's hard, especially for women who have limited diets, to get some of the things they need and get that adequate level of folate. So I do recommend a good prenatal. And a good prenatal for me is one that's hypoallergenic, comes from a really good quality company, has the right form of folate in it, uses a MTHF or something. You know, there's a couple of different forms, but I don't want to get into that right now. But the right kind of folate, and also a good quality of B vitamins and magnesium, which are also very, very helpful for brain health, detoxification health, pregnancy, lots of different ways that it's important, and important for the fetus as well. So a good quality prenatal that's clean, doesn't have any artificial things in it, and has the right form of folate is best. I also think that taking an essential fatty acid supplement is very important. We know not only do women benefit from the essential fatty acids, our own brain and body health, and essential fatty acids are also really important for normal immune function, but we also know that babies developing brains need a lot of DHA, and DHA is one of the essential fatty acids that is mostly found in fish. So I do recommend generally an essential fatty acid, a fish oil supplement. And again, fish oil supplements can be highly, highly contaminated with mercury. So knowing that you're getting one from a clean source is extremely important. And the other thing about fish oil is that many people look at the label and think that whatever the dosage is on the label of their bottle is the adequate dosage for them. But for pregnant women, my recommendation is usually about 3 grams of fish oil a day. And that's more than most people will get in the daily recommended supplement. So usually they have to take about twice as much. But about 3 grams a day is a good recommendation for a healthy woman and a healthy baby. The other thing that may sound unusual, but I think is incredibly important, is probiotics. Probiotics are that good bacteria you hear about you hear lots of commercials for it now, Acidophilus and some of the other strains of probiotics. Our digestive tract is filled with trillions of bacteria. Actually, our body, about 5 pounds of our body weight is bacteria. But it's good stuff, and it's good stuff we want. We don't want to lose that 5 pounds. We might want to lose a different 5 pounds, but not that one.
Right.
The problem is that many of us, due to lots of antibiotic use or poor diet, don't have a really good balance of the good bacteria versus some undesirable bacteria that can also take up residence in our gut. And that can cause us lots of issues. It can cause us to feel sick. It can cause changes in the immune function. Probiotics are really important for the way we digest, and they help us extract more nutrients from our food. So probiotics are really, really important. And I've also found them to be helpful for fertility. And they're also incredibly essential for the baby. When babies are born and they come through the birth canal, they actually ingest their mother's bacteria. And that's how they start colonizing their own. So if mom doesn't have a good balance of bacteria, baby's not going to have a good balance. And then I see lots of kids with eczema and reflux and colic because they didn't get exposure to that good bacteria because their mom wasn't colonized properly. So I'm a huge fan of taking probiotics both to enhance mom's digestion and extraction of nutrients and also to make sure that the new baby is then exposed to the right kind of bacteria, because that's really, really important for their long-term health as well. And we're actually finding that genetically, you can inherit bacteria as far back. Like if you have a change in your probiotics, they can see we're inheriting probiotics from our grandparents. And if they mutate or they change, we're inheriting those changed ones. So it's important to make sure we're giving our kids the right ones.
So what do you, in the case of many women that have to have C-section, is there anything to recommend based on that? Because obviously that process isn't happening.
That's a great question. Thank you for asking that. Yes, I actually send most of my clients to the hospital with a bottle of baby probiotics, infant probiotics. to make sure that if there is a C-section, they can start putting some of those probiotics in the baby's mouth from the first day of life to help colonize that. I've also recommended for certain women who have chronic problems with maintaining their good flora, I've used suppositories, vaginal suppositories, to help them repopulate and recolonize for the baby, you know, right before delivery. But, you know, lots of things women can do. But, yes, after a C-section, it's really important to make sure your baby's getting exposed to probiotics.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And one other nutrient that I don't think we pay enough attention to, but that's important both for fertility, conception, and for the baby's brain development, is choline. Mm-hmm. And that's a nutrient that we don't hear very much about. It's usually grouped with the B vitamins, but it's not technically a B vitamin. But it is very important for brain development. And so it's one thing that we don't often get enough of. So I generally recommend they either get a prenatal vitamin that has choline in it, or they get their choline from another source, a different supplemental source. And eggs actually have a nice amount of choline in them. And some people are fearful of eggs. They think they're not healthy. But eggs are actually incredibly healthy. They have what's considered a very high biological value, which means they closely mimic the protein that humans need more than any other protein source. And the whole cholesterol thing, really, eggs got a bad rap, and they really don't contribute to high cholesterol. And they are full of important nutrients that are very, very helpful for babies. So I'm a big fan of eating eggs when you're pregnant.
Yeah, I think we've tried to debunk that. That whole cholesterol is high cholesterol is causing the food you eat myth through the magazine. In fact, we had a bunch of articles in the February issue on that again. So,
right, and one of the articles I once wrote for you talked about food myths, and one of them was the danger of eggs. So I remember,
right.
I know that you've been a big proponent of that, which is great.
Yep, I totally agree. So there is definitely, we've covered a lot, and there's definitely a lot more information in your chapter. I want to give people an opportunity to contact you, and so if you want to talk a little bit about your practice and how you want people to get in touch with you if they have further questions.
Sure, that'd be great. So my name is Vicki Koblener, K-O-B-L-I-N-E-R. My practice is called Whole Care Nutrition, and it's whole as in holistic, so it's H-O-L-C-A-R-E. Nutrition. And I do have a website, wholecarenutrition.com. My phone number is 203-834-9949. And I can be emailed at Vicki, V-I-C-K-I, at wholecarenutrition.com. And I, as I said, I have a I'm in private practice. My office is located in Wilson, but I do phone consultations. And I see a wide variety of clients from infancy, you know, from preconception through infancy, through adulthood, working with all kinds of chronic illnesses and trying to heal them naturally. But I love working with women who want to get pregnant or are planning to have children, because I think that the more we get our moms healthy, the more our children will be healthy, and the more our future will be healthy. And so I love working with moms and moms.
Right. And as you said, if our grandparents are determining some of our, obviously genetics, but also just
even our flora, right?
Yeah.
Right.
You got to go way back.
You got to go back, and we have to start now, because I think, you know, better living through science was what, you know, they used to say 50 years ago. And science is wonderful, and science has, you know, made many, many miracles, but we've also, I think, been a little bit led astray by thinking that everything scientific is great, everything chemical is great, that there's no worries. And I will say that very often I have clients who will say to me, well, I asked my doctor if this or that was safe, and he said not to worry about it because there's no proof that it's a problem. And I'll go back to what I said originally. Lack of evidence does not mean it's not a problem. And getting back to natural, natural, you know, nature, foods from nature, whole foods, less processed, is a really important way to go.
Right. And as we discussed, it's not always as expensive or complicated as you might think.
Right.
There's definitely some easy alternatives and solutions for sure.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, great. Okay. So thank you so much for being on the call today, Vicki. And we appreciate all this great information. If people are interested, they can contact you, either by phone, email, or your website. And anybody who's interested in purchasing the book can contact you directly as well. As I said, we should have those out mid-April, but we'll keep people updated. And thanks again for your time.
Thank you, Mrs. Gray.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Yep, bye-bye.